nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Enjoy the show.
Okay. So as you know, we started this course back in September talking about a really small device, what you might call atomic scale transport, where you had, where we say this expression for current, et cetera, was in terms of the density of states. And now we spent October talking about these EK relationships for different types of devices. And based on that, we have now this concept of, you know, first we know how to calculate density of states from eigenvalues. And we also have this additional concept now of this density of modes, which is what you need for calculating the current. And as I mentioned, this leads to a slightly different view of what you might call ballistic transport. And that is, we say that, well, we have this conductor where you can think of this EK relationship with all these subbands, different subbands that you have. And if the current flow across this is ballistic, which means electrons get from left to right without scattering at all, then you have a rather interesting situation where one group of states, namely the ones that have a positive K, see the states that are going from left to right, because states with positive K also have this positive group velocity, so the electrons in those states are moving from left to right, and you have states that are moving from right to left, and the left to right states are all occupied according to the left contact, so have a chemical potential of mu 1, and the ones going from right to left are occupied from the right contact. That's where they come from, and they're occupied according to mu 2. And you can calculate the current from this expression, which, as we have discussed, is kind of follows from what we had done back in September, except that in September, instead of this, we had this pi d gamma. And if instead of gamma, you put h bar v over L, then you get this concept of modes. Okay. And there's this interesting idea that now it's like half the states are occupied according to mu 1, the other half are occupied according to mu 2. And the number of electrons can be obtained from this expression. Okay. Now, what I want to talk about today, and more this week, is the what happens if it's not ballistic transport, but let's say we have something in between so that electrons coming in from here can only partially transmit across this. Because ballistic means whatever comes in here just goes straight through. But let's say only a fraction of it goes through, and that fraction we'll call T. And of course, if there's a fraction T going through, the rest of it must be just coming back. So that you could call R. So R is what comes back. T is kind of what gets through. And T is a number less than 1, so it could be, say, 80%, 0.8, in which case R should be 20%. The two must always add up to 1. Okay. And what you want to work up towards is, that's what, you know, lots of real devices are like when it's sufficiently long. Because there is some scattering processes, and so electrons don't get from left to right without scattering. They get turned back. Now, first question is, what happens to the current itself here? So what you might expect physically without too much discussion is that the current should, what do you think would happen to the current? Firstly, should it go down or up? go down. Why? Because of all the electrons that are coming in, only a fraction gets through now. Okay? So one way people think about this is, well, the amount of current that was coming in is this dEm of E that tells you all these electrons that were coming in. And now since only a fraction T gets through, you should put a T here. And that's kind of right, actually. Okay. So the current goes down by a factor of T. So what that means is that if you look at the conductance for small voltages, as I've mentioned before, for small voltages, actually, you can simplify this a little bit and write the conductance in the following way. You could say I is equal to this is something we did back in September, that this F1 minus F2 for small voltages can be written as this is something, you know, requires a little discussion that, you see, if the voltage was 0, then F1 and F2 would be exactly equal. And when you put a small voltage, then the difference between the two functions can be written in terms of this derivative of the Fermi function times the difference in the two chemical potentials, mu1 and mu2. And so you get del F del E times QV. And if you accept that, then you can see that the conductance, which is equal to I over V, comes to 2q squared over h, so all I've done is taken this q from here, put it up here, taken that v, divided it by v, and call that the conductance. So this would be an expression that one can use to calculate the conductance for small voltages. Now, by the way, what does this derivative look like? If you think about it, this energy, the Fermi function looks something like this, as you know. Yes, yes, you're right. So if I have a T there, which in general is also a function of energy, of course. If I have a T there, I should add a T here also. No question, right? Same. So in general then, the conductance would look something like this. And this looks like a complicated integral, and what I'm trying to explain is the physical meaning of this. You see what this is. It's like, if you look at the Fermi function, it looks something like this, where this is the mu, chemical potential. Now my question is, what does the derivative of this look like? See, it's 0 up here, 0 down here, and basically the peak value is somewhere around here. So something like this. And what is the area under this curve? You know, this is del F del E. So if I integrate del F del E from one end to the other, what you get is, you know, this is an exact differential. So it basically is f at this end minus f at that end. That's it. And at this end, it's 1. At that end, it's 0. So when I integrate, the area under that curve is 1. So the point I'm trying to make is that this function here really just looks like something whose area is 1 and which is like peaked right around the chemical potential. So what that means is that when you do this integral, what you're really doing is looking at this quantity and sort of taking its average over this energy range, you see, because you're kind of taking whatever function this happens to be, this m times t. This, of course, could be a function that, say, looks like this, something that's increasing, for example. Then what you're saying is we want its value right around here. So the answer you'll get after averaging will be something in between. That's the basic point. So by multiplying with this function, that's basically like taking an average of that quantity. Okay? So the takeaway message from all this is that conductance is like this 2q squared over h, which is this fundamental quantum of conductance. I mean, that's this q squared over h and 2 for 2 spins that we put in. And then it's multiplied by basically these two quantities, m and t, have, you know, the average value around the chemical potential. So it's m, t, and I'll just put a wiggle on top to remind you that that wiggle basically says you have to take this average, that's all, something like this. So you could define this mt with the wiggle as something like this. That's what it really means. That's the definition of this. So for this discussion then, let's assume that this temperature is low enough that when I average it, I mean, I don't really have to worry too much about averaging it over a wide range. I can just think of it as m times t at around the chemical potential, whatever it is. It doesn't vary too much over that range. So for this discussion, that, you know, kind of simple, so that we don't have to worry about this averaging continuously. So you just take it as that. Now, this is what is currently called the Landauer formula for the conductance. So conductance is 2q squared over h, number of modes times the average transmission per mode. And sometimes this whole product is written as t bar, and you call that like the total transmission. The thing is, this t is transmission probability. It lies between 0 and 1. It cannot be, say, 11, for example. Whereas m is, of course, the number of modes. That can be 10, 20, 100, whatever it is. And so the product, that quantity can be a big number. So conductance is this quantum of conductance, you know, which is like the inverse of about 12 kilo ohms or so, times the transmission. And that's the Landauer formula that you will widely see in this field. People often use that to get a quick idea of what to expect for the conductance, something small. Okay. Now, one point that I'd like to discuss a little more is that what is the, you know, I argued that when it was ballistic, it was like all the positive going waves were occupied according to this chemical potential, whereas all the negative going waves were occupied according to that chemical potential. That was the ballistic transport. Now, the question is, what if you have a scatterer like this in between? What is the occupation on either side? Now, what does it look like? So, what we're talking about then is, So you have this conductor with a scatterer in between. And we are talking about the occupation of the positive K states and the negative K states. And the positive K states, let us say, under when you had ballistic conditions, the occupation of these states around here at this energy. If you look at these states and if you look at these states, these were all fully occupied because they came from this chemical potential, and these states were all completely empty. So I could say for positive states, the occupation is 1. For negative states, the occupation is 0. Inside the wire. Now, of course, once you get inside the contact, deep inside here, then they all have the same chemical potential. It's just that inside this conductor, that's where they're separated. So somewhere in here, it all combines. Somewhere in here, it does this. So I guess if I had 2 color chalks here, I'd probably have used red for this. You know, that's the plus K states and some other color for this, which is the negative K states. Now, this is what you'd have for ballistic transport. Plus K states highly occupied, negative K states not so occupied. Now, my question is, if I have a scatterer here, how do I change this picture? Yeah, so there is the scatterer right here. First question is, to the left of the scatterer, will the minus K states be completely empty like I had before? No, because now you see what happens is electrons come in from here and they can get turned around. There's a fraction R that actually gets reflected back. So the occupation of these negative states here is not close to 0, but it's more like R. Remember, transmission is T, reflection is R equals 1 minus T. And it looks something like this. Now, what about the occupation of the plus K states out here? Now, you see, only a fraction T gets through. So, if you look at plus K states here, let's say T is 80%. It will only be 80% occupied. If it's 20%, it will only be 20% occupied. So, if you look there, you'd see something like this. So this is 1, R, this is T, and this is 0. So remember, what I'm plotting is this thick line is the plus K occupation. This thin line is the minus K. And so if I just were to join them, you could draw something like this in between. So the occupation suddenly drops across the scatterer. Okay. Now, the reason I'm saying this is kind of useful or important why you're drawing this is, okay, firstly, of course, we can calculate the current, if you like. And the thing is to note that when I calculate currents, I can look at the current either here or here, and I'll get the same answer. If I look here, I'll see hardly any electrons going backwards, but t, a fraction t of electrons going forward. So the current would be t minus 0, in the sense that t number of electrons, t fraction of electrons, I guess, carry current in the positive direction, and 0 carries current in the backward direction. So current is t minus 0, proportional to that. Or I could be standing here and calculating current. Now there's a lot more electrons. You know, lots of electrons here, lots of electrons here. But the fraction carrying current forwards is, let's say, 1. And the fraction carrying current backwards is r. And so the current is, net current is still 1 minus r. That's still t. That's the thing. So here it is t minus 0 equals t. Here it's 1 minus r equals t. Now, which is as it should be. You have got steady state transport. Whatever current you have here, you should have exactly the same current here. In that sense, I've said that, you know, as long as you're thinking of electrons as particles moving down, it's really not too different from cars going along a highway and getting turned around at some point. You can think of that and you'll see you should have exactly the same situation. Okay? No more physics than that, really, in a way. Okay. And at steady state, whatever rate they're coming in here, they're getting out there. Otherwise, you see cars would be piling up in between. So steady state, current is the same everywhere. Okay. So this kind of tells you, gives you a picture of why you expect the current to be whatever it was before multiplied by t. You could calculate the current here. You could calculate the current here. No matter how you do it, you'll get t. That looks reasonable. Now, the other reason I draw this is that in a way, you could think of this curve that I've drawn here as something like the quasi-Fermi level or chemical potential associated with that. You see, you know, this chemical potential tells you to, you know, how occupied these states are in a way. That is, you know, when I draw the chemical potential here, it means all these states are occupied. Now, let us say all these states are only 80% occupied. So I could think of it as if, I mean, actually what is happening is all these states are 80% occupied, but I could think of it as if only 80% of the states are occupied. So if they could just relax their energy and go down to the lowest level, lowest levels, then what would have happened is in this energy range, about 80% of it would have been occupied. So you could view it that as sort of the chemical potential of these states. So if you think of it that way, you could say that, oh, yeah, when I look at the chemical potential, it suddenly drops here. You know, it is like 1 and then suddenly becomes t. And here it's r and it becomes 0. So across a scatterer, the chemical potential suddenly drops. And what that tells me is I have a certain resistance here, in the sense that I've got a current flow, and if I call this a voltage drop, if I think of this as a drop in potential, then I could say, okay, that's the, so if I take this voltage and divide it by the current, that would give, tell me what resistance to associate with it. You see, this is kind of conceptually very important and is important in terms of interpreting and understanding small conductors. That's because, you see, in the early days, I've often mentioned that there was a lot of argument back in the 80s about what is the conductance of a ballistic conductor. Or in any case, ballistic conductor simply means T is equal to 1. But in general, of any conductor, and if you write the conductance this way, then the corresponding resistance, you'll notice, is H over 2Q square times 1 over m times 1 over t. That's what you call the resistance. And the thing is, the original Landauer formula, I mean, these days when people talk of the Landauer formula, they talk of this one. They usually use this. But the original Landauer formula was actually this one. This was the original Landauer formula. Not 1 over t, but r over t. R, or, you know, if you like, 1 minus t over t. either way. I could write it as 1 minus t over t, let's say. And the question is, yeah, what does this represent? And what's the difference between these two? Because if you look back in the 80s, again, there were lots of papers arguing as to whether resistance is 1 over t or 1 minus t over t. I mean, there were actually papers with just that title. Is it 1 over t or 1 minus t over t? See? And you can kind of see the difference if you have this picture in mind. Because one way to think about it is that you say, I've got a current through this structure that we have agreed. The current is proportional to t. That we have agreed. Current is proportional to t. There's no doubt about that. And based on that, you might say, okay, if current's proportional to t, and I've got a fixed voltage across it, put some voltage across this, and I got a current proportional to t, then conductance should be proportional to t, and resistance should be 1 over t. Seems reasonable. But when you have this picture in mind, then you can kind of see that the voltage drop across the scatterer itself is that much. You know, whether you look at this one or that one, you get the same. And the rest of the voltage is kind of dropped around the contacts. And so you say that, well, if I want the resistance of this scatterer itself, I should take not the entire voltage and divide it by the current, but I should only look at this voltage and divide it by the current. And that's really the what I should call the resistance of this scatterer. And the rest of it is really associated with the interface, wherever that happens to be. So you call that a contact resistance. So from this point of view, it is like, you see, this is like the resistance of the scatterer. So I'll put an S here. This is the resistance associated with the scatterer itself. And then there is an additional resistance, which is what you'd call a contact resistance. So this is, you know, we talked about this earlier, that a ballistic conductor with M modes has a resistance of so much. Right? This is what we had discussed earlier. And that is the part. In a ballistic conductor, of course, you don't have this drop. Everything is associated with the contacts. So it is as if you got these two things in series. So this is the overall R, and this is the scatterer part of it, and this is the contact part of it. That would be the way you think about this. So total is indeed this. Because you'll notice if I add the two, of course, 1 minus t over t is like 1 over t minus 1. And then this is like plus 1. So when I add the two, I get 1 over t. So in a way, what you're doing is you're taking this 1 over t and writing it as 1 over t minus 1 plus 1. And then calling this the scatterer part and calling this the conductance, the contact part. That's it. You see? And as I say, this, of course, wasn't at all clear back in the 80s. I mean, enormous debates about all this. But now in hindsight, basically this is what it amounts to. That's the total resistance. But then this much is associated with the interface or the contact itself. And what is left is what you'd associate with the scatterer, right? So, and that's this, 1 minus t over t. And what that tells you is, if you have a ballistic conductor, so if you have a scatterer which doesn't scatter at all, then t is equal to 1, so it has no resistance at all. So something that doesn't scatter, doesn't turn you back, has no resistance at all. And whatever resistance we are talking about is really has to do with the contacts. And now one thing that I'm not getting into at this stage, but we'll talk in the coming weeks about, is where exactly is the heating that is associated with a resistance. That is, you see, in these nanoscale conductors, we're talking about a resistance. And associated with a resistance, there are two things. One is current times resistance, which we think of as the voltage drop. And what I'm trying to say is that voltage drop this is, you know, there's some of it that happens across the interface and some of it that actually happens across the scatterer. That's what you're trying to say here. But in addition to this voltage drop, there's another thing that you associate with a resistor, and that is how much heating takes place. That's the I squared R. What's the heat? And that is a whole separate question that we want to talk about separately, because, you know, we usually say that whenever there's a resistance and you run current through it, it gets hot. This is I squared R loss. But if you have a conductor where electrons are not exchanging energy with anything, so in other words, electrons go straight through, or there is some scatterer so that they get turned around, but then it's all purely elastic. I mean, no energy is exchanged. You know, so if you had a rigid thing sitting here, some fraction gets reflected, some fraction gets through, no energy exchange, then you see there can't be any heating. In order, heating really means that the electron exchanges energy with the solid itself, that somehow the electrons lose some energy, and because of which the atoms in your solid start jiggling, and that's what you call heat. So as long as the thing is small enough that electrons are not really exchanging energy with it, there is really no heating as such here. And indeed, in small conductors, what people find is most of the heating that is associated with that resistance is often entirely in the contacts. So in other words, you see, in small conductors, the amount of currents that people are running through them at this time, if all the heat were actually dissipated inside here, it would have burnt up. Because, you know, small things can't get rid of heat so easily. And they believe that the only reason it doesn't burn up is because most of the heat really goes into the contacts. And of course, the contacts are big things which can get rid of all that heat, don't have to get heated, don't get too hot in the process. Okay? So there is experimental evidence then that actually a lot of the heat really takes place, heating takes place in the contact. So this heating issue, that's a kind of separate thing that we want to talk about separately. But as far as how do you interpret this resistance in terms of voltage drops and so on, that's what I was trying to discuss here, that in a way you could think of it like if there was a scatterer with a transmission T, then the voltage drop across it is proportional to this 1 minus T. And the current is proportional to T, and so you could call its resistance like 1 minus T over T. That was the point here. Okay. Now, one of the things I want to talk about a little more after this is the following, that usually, of course, in devices, in solids, what you have is not one big scatterer like this, but lots of little scatterers. So, you know, you have lots of little things. And each one scatters just a little bit, maybe 1%, 0.5%, less, 0.1%. But it's just that there are thousands of them. And that's why eventually you end up losing quite a bit. And that's the thing. Now, the question is that if you have a fairly large conductor, then how do you eventually get Ohm's law out of this? Because eventually, you see, you expect that the conductance should be, this conductance should go as, you see, width over length or area over length. You know, width, if it's a two-dimensional conductor, if it's a three-dimensional conductor, you know, where you have a cross-section, it should be like area over the length. So the question is, what do you expect? I mean, how do you expect this to give you W over L? And what you have seen before is that M gives you the W. In the sense, when you get to big conductors, the number of modes is proportional to the width of the conductor or the area of the conductor. That we have discussed before, right? That was part of what we had done. But this length dependence, this 1 over L, that really comes from this transmission part of it. And in essence, of course, the point is that if I make something twice as long, it has twice as many scatterers, and so the transmission goes down. I mean, that's why the longer you make it, the less the conductance, more the resistance. That's this Ohm's law. In essence, that's it. Longer you make it, less the T. So question is, how does T go down with long conductors? And so basically what would happen is, if instead of one big scatterer here, you had lots of little scatterers, which were uniformly distributed across the whole thing, then again, it would do this, basically, across the whole. It would go down linearly as you go past it. That's basically the result. And the transmission through a region of length L and this is what I want to explain a little more in detail, is that transmission across a region of length L is given by lambda plus L, lambda, where this lambda is called the mean free path. So, if you have something that is very short, so L is almost zero, then what's the transmission? One. So, for things that are much shorter than a mean free path, transmission is one. For things that are much longer than a mean free path, that's when you can drop this quantity and you get Ohm's law, because Ohm's law means that conductance is supposed to go as inverse of length, and that's only true when you have really long conductors, really long meanings many mean free paths long, because then you can drop this and overall it would look. So let me write this here. This T is so M is proportional to W or cross sectional area, whatever. And W for a two dimensional conductor, cross sectional area if the cross section is in two dimensions. This is a three dimensional conductor. But the transmission goes down is this. And for long channels, you can drop this, and then it looks like Ohm's law. But the point is, if you just adopt Ohm's law as it is, 1 over L, then that would have told you that when you get to a really short conductor, of course, it should, the conductance should go to infinity, which is the resistance should go to zero. That's what you'd have got. And that is kind of true if you look at just the resistance of this part, because then you should be using the 1 minus T over T. Because you see, if T is lambda divided by lambda plus L, then can you help me with what is 1 minus T over T? Yeah, see, 1 minus T over T is like 1 over T minus 1. And 1 over T is lambda plus L divided by lambda, which is 1 plus L over lambda. So 1 over T minus 1 is really just L over lambda. Did I do this right? Yeah. So if instead of T, I were to use T over 1 minus T for conductance, then of course instead of lambda over lambda plus L, I'd have got lambda over L. And then as L tends to 0, it would be a conductance would be very large, resistance would be zero, etc. But what you're actually measuring also includes this contact resistance, etc., that we have discussed. Anyway, so you get this, and so you don't get Ohm's law till it becomes much longer than a mean free path. And this is something very important to remember when you're in trying to interpret the measurements on small conductors, because lots of conductors people make measurements on these days is not hundreds of mean free paths long, but is more like 2 or 3 mean free paths. And in that case, it matters whether you keep the lambda here or not. Whereas if it was hundreds of mean free paths, you could have just dropped that, made no difference. You know, 100 and 101, all the same. Okay. Now, what I want to explain a little bit then is where this one comes from. See? Why transmission, you know, goes down in this way. Suppose, one way to do this is that if you do something like this, that you see, let us say we call this I plus. This is the current going in the positive direction, and I call this I minus. And whenever there is a scatterer, what it means is that derivative of I plus with respect to x is negative. It is going down. And whatever current is coming, some fraction of it is getting turned around. So you could say is equal to minus I plus divided by lambda. I'm sorry, minus I plus. So this is the rate at which this is going down, and minus I plus divided by some quantity that I could call the mean free path. But that's just a constant here, okay. Now, question is, if this was the equation, what would be the solution? Exponential. Then it wouldn't be going down linearly like I had said. It would have gone down exponentially. Because the thing is that while I plus is going down because it's getting turned around, similarly, any electrons going the other way gets turned around and contributes to I plus. So what happens is, just as it gets decreased by this, it gets increased by this. That's the point. Because whatever is going in the forward direction, some of it gets turned around and goes to the reverse. On the other hand, the electrons that were going in the reverse direction, they kind of turn around and add to the flux that is going in the forward direction. So I've got all this. So there is some stuff coming from this side. That's the plus. This is the minus. So I minus, this is I plus. And it goes down because some of it got turned around. But then it goes up because some of this got turned back. And so this what got turned back adds to this flux. Whereas what got turned back here subtracts. So you have some addition and some subtraction there between them. And the thing is, of course, that at equilibrium, I mean at steady state, the difference between I plus and I minus must remain the same. Because as I've said, you can calculate the current any place along this. Whatever's going forwards, whatever going backwards, look at the difference. That's the net current has to be the same. So in other words, d dx of I plus minus I minus, which is the net current, that has to be 0. That can't be changing. So this is dI plus dx. This is also dI minus dx. Same thing. They both do that. Okay. Now, on the right-hand side, what I have, you'll notice, I could write this as minus I divided by lambda. Why? Because I plus minus I minus is actually I. And so, if I, and since I is a constant everywhere, I could write I plus as Can you help me? You know, this is just a constant. So di plus dx is a constant, so I plus just goes down x over lambda, and plus some number here, I'll call a, which I have to adjust to fit the boundary conditions. But this I'll finish up next day, okay?